I would like to ask, if an atheist was asking you that, how do you know that God exists, how would you answer the question?
I'll answer differently and you'll answer differently. I'll answer first of all that Allah has spoken to me, Allah has shown me visions and given me messages which I have seen fulfilled so clearly. And Allah guides me and keeps me on the right path, showing His existence every day. That would be my first answer. But it may not be the first answer of others. So everybody believes in Allah according to his own arguments. Everybody reaches Allah in a different way. In fact, most of the people follow Allah or have faith in Allah because they are born among the believers. That is perhaps the only reason. And they don't challenge it. Why don't they challenge it? Because there is an inborn desire in man to find a creator and to worship him. If there is no Allah, or at least if there is no Allah known to a person, still he would make his own creator and invent his own idol for him to worship. Even in the communist worlds, these idols are being created today because there is an inner urge. For instance, Mao Zedong was once the idol of China, and he was almost held in as high an esteem as prophets are held, even more. Marx is almost like a god to the communist world, and Lenin perhaps is the best of his prophets, to say the least. So this urge and desire to follow someone with a religious zeal, even if your philosophy is godless, that tells us that there is an inner message in every creation that there is a God to you. You must follow. And because there is that strong urge already present in human nature, so those who are born among the religions, they begin to follow them without a question asked, because it confirms with their own inner urge. So, if you ask them a question like this, their answer will be different. So, this is what I want to point out. No one single answer can be given to an atheist by different persons. Everybody has his belief according to his own frame of mind, according to his own social and religious background, his own degree of knowledge and so on and so forth. So that is the general situation as we find in the world today. Again, there are difficulties in providing answers to you in generalizations, because the atheists also are divided into so many categories. All atheists are not of the same type. They don't have the same views. So if I teach you one single answer, still it will not work with certain atheists. First of all, you should remember that atheists are divided into two main categories: atheists and agnostics. Atheists are those who deny the existence of God in positive terms. They say, we know there is no God, and we deny the possibility. Agnostics are those who take the attitude which is a bit softer and perhaps more difficult to follow. They say, we don't know. If there were a God, he might have been, he might not have been. If he were, he might have died. But we don't know. We know that this is the world. We know the hot from the cold and dark from the light. And we know all those things which our five senses can perceive. But of God, we have no evidence. So when such atheists meet you, the first question you should put to them should be that maybe I begin to give you evidence of God as I understand, which will not interest you. Maybe you require some different criteria. So first of all, tell me, what sort of proof would you require before you begin to believe in God? Put him a counter question, I mean. Then things will precipitate. Then you will begin to see clearly what his views are. Then once it begins to describe, then it will be you will have an upper hand. You will begin to criticize his attitude. For instance, when this attitude was adopted earlier, in the earlier periods of Islamic history, against certain Muslim scholars, they took exactly the same position. And when the opponent was forced to clarify his position, then he was in a weaker position, and the believer in God gained an upper hand because of his answer. For instance, in one incident it is said that why somebody said, "I don't believe in God. Prove it." The believer said, "Well, why don't you believe in God?" He said, "I don't see him. I don't believe anything which I don't see." So he slapped him on the face. And he got extremely annoyed. He said, what is this nonsense? I asked you for the proof of God and you slapped me on the face. He said, what is the harm? He said, you have created pain. He said, show me, I don't see it. Where is the pain? Or do you see it? So then he realized that this was a counter to his position, that the things which you don't see, you don't believe in. But that was an earlier age. In the modern times, you believe in certain things which cannot be sensed by the five senses at all. That is to say, directly. You believe in certain things which are totally absent, in the sense that you can neither feel them, nor hear them, nor see them, nor smell them, nor taste them. They are neither hot nor cold directly to you. But you know they exist. Sometimes through certain certain means of knowing them are available to you, which convert the values so that you begin to see. But still, there are certain things which are present, which are totally absent from you. And only higher beings, the more advanced people among you, great scientists, they know them, and because you believe in them, so you also believe in the scientists, so you begin to believe in those things. Otherwise, directly, you can offer no proof of their existence. This is exactly what I told some questioner a few days ago in the question answer session in London. I said, look here, in this cupping of my hands, in this small space, there is music going on. There are rays of so many types. In fact, radiation has unlimited scope. There is Russian being spoken here, German being spoken here, within the cup of my hand. And there are pictures of various types. And there are discussions going on, and dramas being played, and pictures being shown. And 101 languages are found in this cupping of my hand. And they don't interfere with each other. And it is for you to detect them. And then once you detect them, then you will begin to see, yes, what I was telling you was true. Put an antenna here and use the proper channel and a booster. You will begin to see Russian program or German program or French program or Danish program or so many other programs. And in each language, so many different programs. And also, there are billions of things, not only hundreds, billions of radiations at various levels, which still are occupied by the same space. The same space is occupied by them. In this small space, even smaller, at this size, even smaller size, if you put a small antenna in there, and you have a means to find out which particular radiation there is, and you want to hear it and convert it into values which you understand, if you have means, you can still do it. in the spectrum of vision, we see light and we see darkness. I mean, we don't see light and we call it darkness. But what we call darkness, they are hidden lights. Only our eyes are not attuned to that spectrum. And there are unlimited scopes of things to be seen, only if you had eyes to see them. But still, we don't see them and we believe in them, because through other means, through great scientists, we have received evidence of their existence. So, God is the ultimate in refinement. God is the ultimate source of all beings. How could He be reached by coarser beings like us, with coarser measures, while even the created things are so refined at times that we can't reach them by our five senses? So, for an agnostic, in principle, you can give this answer, that there are possibilities you have begun to believe, which previously were unthinkable, and they are still absent from your eyes. In reality, the more powerful things are not material. They can't be sensed, they can't be touched, they can't be smelled. Only when they are released, then the destruction caused by them can be observed. For instance, the greatest dangers posed by atomic warfare are by such radiation which is neither heat nor cold, nor can you see it, nor you can touch it. It is just the wave, and it is so strong, so destructive, that it can destroy cities in a matter of a jitty. Without ever heat reaching there, this first shock wave, which is called shock wave, it travels faster than the heat wave. So before the heat is released from an atomic bomb, this shock wave travels at a faster pace and destroys cities, and nobody knows what had happened. They would neither see it nor touch it, because it has no glow, no solidity which can be touched and verified and measured. So most of the things which exist are non-observed. At least this is the finding of the modern day scientists. What we observe is very small. The spectrum of light, for instance, is very narrow as compared to the rest of the spectrum. Spectrum of hearing also is very narrow as compared to the rest of the spectrum. We are allotted a certain range in the sound waves. Only we can hear those sound waves to which our ears are attuned. The sound waves lower than that range are here, but we can't hear them. Sound waves beyond the limit of that range are here, and they are innumerable, and things are going on, only we are not attuned to them. If somehow you get attuned to them, you will enter a new world of hearing. Things are going on in a strange way, which you can begin to hear, but only if you are attuned. For instance, the explosion of first explosion of creation, which is called Big Bang. Do you know how old it is? Perhaps 14 billion years ago it took place. And the sound which was created is still existing in the universe. If you go to the, what is called, beside the Madame Tussauds, planetarium. If you go to the planetarium, not now, but previously I remember, when I came here in 78, they used to reproduce that sound by catching it from the cosmos and reproducing it in a wavelength which we could hear. And the explosion which took place 14 billion years ago. You know how big that is? 14 billion? Do you know that? No. How many millions go towards a billion? That much years ago, an explosion took place, and the sound is still existing in a wavelength which we cannot hear. But the scientists, through instruments, have now power to multiply that sound and amplify it to a degree that it enters our hearing sound wave spectrum. The result is that you begin to hear. I heard it myself in that planetarium. Mona was not there at that time. Shoki, Faiza, my two other daughters were with me, and they were surprised. So the wonders are so many that most of the world of realities is hidden from us. So if this is such a wonderful world, why shouldn't there be a creator hidden behind them? Why should he be reached directly by our sight and senses and so on and so forth? So this is one of the major objections which is raised by the atheists, to which you can counter like this. But there are so many other types of atheists, it's impossible for me to give you one single piece of evidence. So the best thing is to start, again I summarize, to start by asking a question to them. You tell them, all right, I believe in God, forget about how I believe and why I believe. Tell me first why you do not believe. And if you are, it is the lack of evidence why you do not believe, then tell me what sort of evidence you would require enough for you to begin to believe in God. You name it, and then I'll give you an answer. So if such a person gives you a positive, tells you of a positive approach through which he can be convinced, then you can give me, write to me or speak to me on the one of the sessions and tell me that this is the answer you received from an atheist, then I can handle that question, because then I know what he wants to know. Otherwise it's difficult to handle, tackle every atheist who is nondescript. This is a very interesting approach made by certain atheists in embarrassing the believers. They ask this question, and sometimes the believers also, when the children, when they begin to grow older and they reach the age of puberty and maturity, such questions automatically also agitate their minds. They say, all right, if it is a must that somebody must have created us, we must have come from somebody else, then who created that first being? That is the big question. It's a dilemma which baffles many, and they say perhaps there is no answer. So the answer to that is that the argument that there must be a creator of everything existing is a wrong argument. You should never say this to an atheist. This is not our argument at all. Our argument is this, that when we study sciences and we begin to reach the origin of life and origin of creation, we observe that we have reached this stage gradually after a very long, long course of development. And we have a direction, and things are made complicated more and more and more as we progress. That is one way of approaching this, an atheist who has this frame of mind. You know, for instance, you have eyes, you have brain, a brain so highly computerized that no man-made computer, even in this age, can compete with your brain in computation. And it is so perfectly provided with the concomitant machinery that it has a small brain, handles all messages through hearing, through touch, through sight, through feeling, and computes them and puts them in order in certain shelves in your memory. And for each new impulse you receive from any direction, there are sometimes millions of readjustments in the brain in every second. For instance, when you hear me, but your brain immediately sends messages to all the cells. I have heard this voice before. Where did I hear it? And those messages, they return immediately in a split second to the center of your consciousness and say, this is the voice of so-and-so, which you have heard so many times. And then this voice revives certain feelings in your body, which are produced by certain voices. And for that, millions of messages are sent all through the body system, to your heart, to your other glands, to your skin, because sometimes you hear a voice and your skin begins to tingle. Sometimes you hear a voice and hatred is the natural result. Sometimes love results from hearing a voice. And the same is true when you see faces. There are certain faces you can't tolerate. You shut the television off, says, nonsense, I can't tolerate such a face. And certain voices you can't tolerate. And the vice versa is also true. There are certain faces which remind you of certain people whom you love so much, and which have associations which are placed in your childhood or some other interesting occasion of your life. All these things are recorded in various places, and just hearing one voice, the brain begins to send messages all over, and the scientists tell us now that in 1 second millions of messages are sent and the reactions received and computed again. And the final sense which you receive is done after everything. You see a place, and sometimes you have a feeling that I have seen it somewhere before. Why that feeling, you know? Because it happens every day, every instant of your life, that when you see a thing, immediately you get the answer within, and you are satisfied. When you don't get that answer, then you kept wondering, why this strangeness? Perhaps I have seen something like this before. But your brain is incapable of reaching out for the truth and telling you, reminding you that this is why. But these feelings occur very occasionally. Most often than not, you don't have to ask these questions, you don't have to go through their feelings, because automatically the matter is being attended to by this supercomputer of your brain. Now, this is an organization. This requires an organizer. So, if a thing is highly organized, which was not previously organized, and we know positively that previously it was not so organized, for that you must have an organizer. So, there is not just one premise to this. There are two premises. To simplify the matters, this is a bunch of flowers. It is organized. Previously, it was scattered like this, for instance. When you find it organized, then the question is raised, who put it there? In the disorganized form, you may not ever ask this question. So these two premises are not present with regards to God, because we don't know His nature. We know only this, as far as we are concerned. We were not organized before. Now we are organized. There has to be an organizer. और जो कांटे लगे हुए हैं इसके इसके लिए क्या लाएंगे इतिहास से हाँ So the argument is not this, because this is there is a flower, there has to be a creator. The argument is this, that if a thing is disorganized previously, and then it is organized to a perfection that baffles all human attempts to understand it.
such an organization of a disorganized state requires an organizer. Now, this argument has no answer which can be given to you by an atheist if he is a sensible person. Try this. If he says this is a blind evolution, blind organization, you say, can a computer be formed gradually of itself? The ordinary computer, if it goes wrong, ordinary people can't set it right. So for in a disorganized state to be organized, this is one of the most important fundamental evidence for the existence of God. On this, a counter question of who created does not appear, does not apply. This is the type of argument which was used by Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa against an atheist. Once a debate was due to be held between Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa, a great Muslim scholar and the founder of a school of jurisprudence, and an atheist who used to brag that no believer in God has ever been able to defeat him. So it was announced and the whole area was looking forward to the time and date and place when this debate would be held. So that atheist reached the place of appointment in time, exactly, and waited for Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa to arrive. And he didn't. It took 2 hours for him to reach. And everybody was so disgusted with him. Everybody thought perhaps he had run away. He was afraid of this debate. And when he reached there, people started censuring him with their looks and things. And then that atheist said, look here, you see, I knew. A believer is so punctual and so perfect in his commitments and things. And a non-believer. And look at the believer. This is the godly person who didn't keep his promise. He's so irresponsible. How can he hold a debate with me? So Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa said, please listen, first of all. I have an excuse, I have a reason to put forward. I have a justification to offer. Why do you censure me without hearing me? So he said, all right. Tell me what your justification was. He said, look here. I have come across a river, you know that. I live across the river. There was a river flowing in between. So when I reached the river, there was no boat. While I was wondering how I would cross the river, suddenly a gale took place, storm, and some trees, it felled certain trees. And suddenly I saw the same gale brought a saw, and it started working on the tree and turning it into planks. And while I was wondering how it happened, suddenly nails appeared from somewhere, a shower of nails, and the buffeting of winds put the planks in order and shaped them like a boat. And suddenly I saw the nails were being driven from all sides. And there the boat was. And I was wondering how the boat was created, and then I took the boat and came over. So all that time that I'm late, I was waiting for all this to happen. So the atheist says, you are not only a stupid person, you are a big liar. How could this happen? He said, if this could not happen, how could you be made? You are much, much more organized, beyond all comparison, to a boat. A boat, simple boat like this. So before you were not. Before everything was disorderly. So if you can't believe in this miracle to happen, these 2-3 factors are just involved. But in the making of human body, in the making of human mind, in the making of human eye, billions upon billions upon billions of certain such chances must happen before you create a single eye, or before you create a single cell of life. There's such complexities. Yet previously, they were so disorderly, they were just oxygen and hydrogen and carbon, and that's all. So how did they get organized with a direction, with a meaning, with a sense? So this is the argument we put forward, and to this argument I have not come across any sane person who can counter you. So scientific people can be approached by scientific arguments, but there are so many others who are not scientific. For them you will have to invent different arguments.